Jean Valjean knocked on the door the night before and said, I'm a thief, I'm a convict, I need somewhere to sleep, I need somewhere to eat, and they let him in. And then, middle of the night, he gets up and he steals from them, gives the bishop his good right hook, and then they catch him, and right there, he's recalling the 19 years of prison, of hard labor that he had done. I don't know if you catch this, but this is his death sentence. That scene right there, he is in this place where he is to pay penance for his sin. And though maybe his body might make it through prison, certainly his soul cannot go through it again. He is on the brink of life and death. And then he encounters something he's never encountered before. The love and mercy of Christ as expressed through his church, through the bishop. And in this scene, he can't fathom it. He's never seen anything like this before. And he says, why are you doing this? And the steely-eyed bishop looks straight into his soul, past these years of well-crafted walls and pretentiousness, where he's kept himself hidden from others. He looks straight through all these walls, and he says, I have bought your soul. I've bought your soul from a life of hatred and fear, and I give you back to God. This is a life-changing moment for Jean Valjean. His life is transformed. From now on and into his future, he will be a man who embodies love and kindness and mercy. And in fact, not just people, but communities are transformed by the love that he has experienced, the love of Christ at work through his people. This is what we're talking about this morning. My new reality, a reality where I've encountered a life-changing love of Christ. We are in week 4 of our Galatians sermon series, Being Set Free, saying there is no other construct, no other religious belief, no other form of thought or living that can set us free like encountering the love of God. So I invite you to maybe let down some walls and to let God speak into your life as we open up his word preserved for us to guide us in life and in faith. So I invite you to open up your Bibles to Galatians 2, verses 17 to 21. If you don't have a Bible here with you this morning, we have the text in the New Living Translation on the PowerPoint. Verse 17. But suppose we seek to be made right with God through faith in Christ, and then we are found guilty because we have abandoned the law. Would that mean Christ has led us into sin? Absolutely not. Rather, I am a sinner if I rebuild the old system of law I already tore down. For when I tried to keep the law, it condemned me. So I died to the law. I stopped trying to meet all its requirements so that I might live for God. My old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not treat the grace of God as meaningless. For if keeping the law could make us right with God, then there was no need for Christ to die. This is the word of the Lord. So if there's something to really center in on this major central piece of this text we're looking at. It's verse 20. My old self has been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. If we're talking about my new reality is that I have died to the old me. I've died to the old me now that I've encountered Christ's love. That's the center of what we're talking about this morning. I've died to the old me now that I've encountered Christ's love. So, in looking through this passage, I want to invite you in to track through this. What's this mean? So, verse 19, or let me look at verse 17 and 18. This grasping God's love, this first point to kind of track through in this message is that some of us, let's go to the next slide on the PowerPoint. Some of us never grasp Christ's love. That can be really found in verse 18. Rather, I am a sinner if I rebuild the old system of law I already tore down. So if you go through life and then you accept Christ, but then you don't live any different. If you live the old life, but you don't live any differently, then it's as if you never grasped the whole thing in the first place. It'd be like Jean Valjean having this experience, this candlestick scene with the priest, and then his life not changing at all out of that encounter. That's kind of some of our process in this new reality is some of us don't grasp what God has done for us. So as we track through this passage, looking at our next point, let's go to it. To grasp this new reality of Christ's love means you die to the old reality. To grasp this new reality of Christ's love means you die to the old reality. Verse 19, for when I tried to keep the law, it condemned me. So I died to the law. I stopped trying to meet all its requirements so that I might live for God. So Paul, he's got this background of trying to do everything by the book, of keeping every single rule, of being good and moral and religious, and yet in his heart, when he examines his motives, he was actually living for himself. And this is actually what religion, you can live, come to church every day, sitting in the chairs you sit in, and though the exterior can be religious, about being good and moral, it can all be about me. I'm doing these good and moral things in order to earn it with God, in order to show that I'm good enough. Or even when you're doing life day to day, you can do those things, say, oh, I did this thing for you. How didn't you recognize that? This, a life of people-pleasing can really, in the end, be about ourself. So we can live with this center, though you got this exterior of trying to be good, trying to be moral. It can all be about me. Paul said, I've done that life. I don't need it. I'm dead to it because I've done it and it doesn't work. Jean Valjean is contrasted in the movie brilliantly, because alongside him, the other major player in the movie is Inspector Javert. And the inspector is hunting Jean Valjean through the whole movie. And he's saying, people don't change. There are rule keepers and rule breakers. And you broke the law once, so you are a write-off. You are to go back to prison. You have to go back. So the whole movie is being hunted. And Javert, his life is the epitome of Paul's old life, of living by the law. He is a good and moral person, except he's not. Everybody in the movie, when they're around him, gets chills, because in his heart, there's no love. There's an absence of love. And this movie brilliantly describes this condition of living by the rules, but having an absence of goodness and moralness. Do you know people like that? Hey, I do everything right, except there's nothing good kind of coming out of them. I think we can all relate to this, going, hey, I just did the right thing, but I kind of didn't. My heart was totally off in this. What's this mean for us? Well, I think we have to examine the motives. When you're doing good, who are you doing it for? This is a question to ask yourself. And I'll tell you, it'll show up in the little things. It'll show up in the little things of your life. Why are you doing what you're doing? Is it for you? Is it in the end, hey, you did this thing for this person? Was it to glorify God? Or was it in the end for yourself? That's the challenge, is we can sit beside each other and have two totally different motivations in why we do what we do, in doing good or being moral. And that leads us into our third point in drawing through this passage. To grasp this new reality of Christ's love means to get a whole new set of motivations. To grasp this new reality of Christ's love, we got some music to it, all right, means to get a whole new set of motivations. What do we mean by that? Verse 20, my old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. He said, I'm dead to the old way of doing every single thing to try and earn my way to God. I've got a new set of motivations. It's this encounter with Christ. To illustrate this life of trying harder and harder, let's talk about many of our homes in Cornell. A lot of our homes, there's a lot of men who deal with alcoholic addictions. It just kind of happens. We go to high school, and then, you know, this is where the fun is found. This is where the meaning's found, is like this, these parties. There's always alcohol around. And then maybe college, and then maybe work parties or neighborhood parties. And for many of us, all of a sudden, it goes from a drink to needing a drink, to needing to escape from the realities of our lives in order to cope, in order to escape. This happens in so many lives. If you think about a marriage, as this happens in a marriage, a wife longs to connect with her husband, to share heart, to share her life. And what can happen is a husband in alcoholic addiction cannot share himself, but can retreat frequently and not be available because he's emotionally checked out. And what happens? After a period of time, what's the wife do? The wife says, I'm fed up of this. This has to change or I'm out. Have you encountered homes like this? Has this ever been your experience? What happens? What happens with the guy? The guy gets his act together for a couple months. He tries hard, and it fixes it for a couple months. then he kind of slowly sinks in to the old way of always doing things. And then the wife gets more and more and more frustrated until this breaking point. We've done this before. Nothing has changed. You said you would change, but nothing has changed. The husband had the best intentions in the world. I was trying to change for you. This is the human condition. We try to change by fixing the exterior. I'll change my behavior by sheer willpower. But what happens? The willpower wears down, and we go back to what we're set in, our set path. You cannot fix your outward actions by just focusing on your outward actions. Something has to change on the inside to fix the outside. You can't change your behavior without changing your heart. You just can't. We try. This is our human condition. We see it in our lives, right? It may not be alcohol. Maybe the situation is switched. Maybe it's the woman dealing with alcohol. Maybe it's a different addiction. But we can't change it. We need an encounter that will change our heart. And there is nothing that can do that like the love of God. There's absolutely nothing that can change our heart like encountering the love of God. And this is what has changed the author of this book. He was a rule keeper. He hunted people down just like Inspector Javert. And he didn't have love in his heart. And he said, I am dead to that way. And this is what's taken place. And this is where I found hope. And I'm never going back. This is my new reality. I've died to the old me now that I've encountered the love of Christ. And this, if you're looking at Christians, if you're here, maybe you're connected to a Christian, maybe you're checking this whole Christian thing out, this is what's kind of annoying about Christians, is like sometimes you'll be with them and they'll be like, oh, I feel terrible. I shouldn't have lied to you like I did. And they're kind of like, well, yeah, I get it. Or like this soul anguish of going, oh, I shouldn't have yelled. I shouldn't have passed on that gossip. And it's like, well, like, what's the big deal about this? Well, the big deal is that I now have a different Lord I'm living for. I have a whole new motivations. And that's the tension in the Christian life, is living into my new reality. Because you still have the cravings of our body, the cravings of our sinful nature, a life opposed to God. This is what this book is about. You have these cravings of the body, and to live a life just to fulfill that. Or you have this new power at work in you, a new power that is greater than the cravings of our body. And it's to live a life of love out of the power of which we've powerfully been loved. This power, love encounter with God. And that's this tension of the Christian life. And it's grasping this new reality of what has been done for me. We talked about how we can sit in the same seats and be living two totally different lives based on two totally different motivations. We've seen this diagram in two of our previous 3 weeks. I'm going to keep this in front of us because I think it so captures what we're talking about. We can live a life of religiousness, or it can be a party exterior or a religious exterior of trying harder. It doesn't matter the exterior. The motives underneath are the same, and it's a cycle of grief, a cycle of trying to achieve to provide an identity, an identity where we're trying to find a sense of significance and pushing and driving to find acceptance from others and for ourselves. And in that acceptance, it's fragile. And we keep, gotta keep performing and achieving. We can, like we said, it doesn't matter the life you're living, whether you've got this church exterior or totally anti-church exterior, you can live like this. Or you can have this encounter with the love of God that sends you in living life in a totally different motivation, a totally different direction, the cycle of grace. And this is what happened in Jean Valjean. He had a counter of love and acceptance which sustained him and gave him new resources, and his identity was built on that acceptance and sense of significance. And out of that, his life just lived. Out of that, he lived, and out of that, he loved, and out of that, he served. He had a new identity. This is a picture of the love of God. Verse 21 is an important verse as well. We don't want to neglect it. Our last verse, Paul says, "I do not treat the grace of God as meaningless. For if keeping the law could make us right with God, then there was no need for Christ to die." If you can go to heaven and go and be with God, and it doesn't matter, all religions point to Him, or if you're just a good person, that's enough, then there is absolutely no need for Christ to have died. There was no need. You don't mix merit and grace. And if any old way gets to God, if being a person, if you can earn it through your goodness, gets to God, then God is a fool. Why on earth would God have been beaten and punished and crucified if he didn't need to? He's incredibly foolish. The one who created galaxies, the one who created the complexity of DNA, was a fool. Or he knew that we couldn't get to him, that we weren't good enough, that we can't earn our way to him. To grasp this, I think we need a soccer metaphor. We got a picture of this guy. Who knows this guy? What's his name? It is not Bend It Like Beckham. Good effort, though. Okay, we don't have many soccer fans. Messi, thank you. Lionel Messi. How do you say his first name? Lionel Messi. Okay, I had it. This guy is absolutely incredible. He is one of the best soccer players on earth. To prove it, we've got a video of a goal. He's going to be on the bottom half. Let's play a short video of one of his goals.
The fact they do have that policy in terms of their player selection makes it all the more remarkable that, along with Barcelona and Real Madrid, Athletic Bilbao have never been relegated from the Primera Division.
It's something to be admired, I have to say. Well, there's three of them, Ronnie. He's still going. Look at this, Kevin.
It's a brilliant run from Messi. Can he go all the way? It's one of the great Copa del Rey final goals from the magical, mercurial Lionel Messi. Lights up the Camp Nou one more time.
Oh, Kevin, I said they need at least two players to stop him. There was three there. He beat all three of them. Then he beat another one, and he put it in the near post. Messi is amazing. The amazing Messi has just scored one of the best goals you're ever going to see in a cup final. Absolutely superb. And this is the genius of the little man. Oh, Kevin, 57 goals now this season, and he's not finished. Great time to score. Look at this. One, two, round him. Gets away from Rico. One more defender inside. Bang. Oh, he's just unbelievable. How do you stop him? And you think three of them around him, he's not going to get past the ball. He does. Then he takes on the fourth, comes inside and scores it at the near post. He's just incredible. I don't think we've ever seen or ever will see anything like Lionel Messi again.
This guy is amazing. This guy, can you imagine meeting him? You think about the fans and how incredible they think this guy is. This guy earns $1 million a week. This guy is a soccer small g god. Can you imagine what it would take to come and be one of his friends? Are you good enough to be one of his friends? What do you think this guy needs? Does he need more friends? Are you good enough to be one of his friends? What would it take to be able to come into fellowship with him and be greeted and live and be with him? This guy makes $1 million a week. God owns trillions of stars and planets. He's the creator of everything. What is it that makes us think that we are good enough to be in God's presence? I think something about Messi and his fame, you kind of go, wow, what would it be like to meet him? It gives us a little sense of the glory and honor of who God is, and that we can't earn our way to his favor. We're not good enough. Who are we? But let Messi point you to the Messiah. And let us understand how we've been living in a way as if the God of the universe doesn't exist. Let us grasp how we reject what he has done for us on the cross when we say any religion, any way, I'm good enough to earn favor into God's presence. Let's recognize what we are saying to the God of the universe when we reject that. And let's also recognize that Jean Valjean's candlestick scene points to a much greater scene of the cross, and that Christ did that for each of us. He did that for us. You thought the priest took a licking? Think what God did for you. And he shows that it wasn't a one-time event, but the God of the universe is pursuing each one of us that we might not have to live with our jail sentence, our death penalty for our sins. He has taken it upon him for us. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it gives us a whole new identity, a whole new way of living. It's not a life of earning, but it's a life that has been transformed by grace and love. And there is nothing like it. If you find yourself living on that grief cycle, it's so natural. We get on it in so many different ways. It's time to pay attention to what the little things of our lives reflect. Am I living for myself? Or am I living for God? Have I grasped this new reality of what it's cost to purchase me, to buy my soul from a life of fear and hatred, fear of sin and death, to be given back to God, to live a life of freedom and love? My new reality, our new reality, is the old me is dead. Now that I've encountered Christ's love.